I kind of want to say with a straight face, but I'm a struggle. Nick said that you roll down a hill when you get necklaced, and we just want to interact. People get necklaced without hills. Is that not a recreational event?
It's not. I don't know why I'm laughing. No, it's not. It's very serious. It's not a sport. It's not. I didn't even thought it was a sport, but the way I said it made it sound like a sport, and I'm very sorry if I.
Yeah, you might sound like it was an activity that people can partake in whenever they feel like it. So
it's like, hey guys,
I just thought,
yeah, it's round everyone up action. And yes,
yeah. So the first thing we got to do, a housekeeping, and necklacing was a very traumatic, serious event that would happen. It's and very no, serious. Not after they lit you on fire, then kick you down a hill. It wasn't a jackass episode because that would be a lot of hills. You'd have to find a lot of hills.
There's so many hills.
A lot of necklacing during apartheid. So, it's a super serious thing.
It's very serious. I'm not laughing at necklacing. That was very serious. But just the whole...
No. So, it's funny that you said it like it was some kind of sport or like a jacket. That's
like
like
roly-poly. It's like those people get in those giant inflatable plastic balls and they like go down the hills. Yeah. It wasn't like that. It was very...
No.
Hectic. It was quite torturous, actually. And I just want to say the reason I brought up necklacing was because we were saying Bill Burr brought up white feminism on SNL. And I was saying that's like bringing up necklacing on Takalani Sesame. So yeah. I wasn't making light of necklacing. I was just saying it was quite a drastic thing for him to mention on such a light platform. That was the point of the whole joke.
I think the issue you had was the rolling down the hill part. That's where you kind of fell short.
The factual inaccuracy
Just because then it just sounded like oaks were lit on fire and then rolled down hills, which obviously didn't happen.
It wasn't a thing. I thought that
so we had to clear that fact out.
That sounds like way worse. Like imagine someone puts a tire on you and you're claustrophobic now, and then the lights on fire, so now you're burning. And then they throw it on a hill, so now you're dizzy as well. Low key, I hate being dizzy. I would rather be on fire and be claustrophobic than be dizzy. So I thought that was the worst part for me, was being dizzy, to be honest.
What, as opposed to having ties put on you and a bunch of petrol and being lit on fire?
Yes.
That's not where you drew the line. And
that's not where I drew the line.
It could be happening to you.
Being dizzy is...
You're like dizzy. Up there for you.
And people tickling my stomach, I hate that as well. That's also...
And
I hate those two things, fire and being
when
tied up.
Getting tickled. You're a grown man. When does someone tickle you?
You know when people try and tickle you when you're a kid and you're like, I don't dig this. I know you're forcing me to laugh. I don't want to laugh at this stage, but I'm laughing because you're tickling
me. I actually
can't. Shit.
Like I'm raw trying to think when was the last time someone tickled me. I can't. There's nothing. There's just blackness.
You know
someone
what it is?
Tickled me? Hell no.
It's because you haven't, because you've been in a relationship for so long, but you maybe won't remember it. But at the beginning of your relationship and every relationship, there's a tickle phase. It's when you guys are getting close and stuff and you start to get to know each other and you try to, you go, you're not ticklish? And the other person goes, no, I'm not ticklish. And that person tries to tickle you on your feet and under your arms and it's like a cute thing. And then, but I have to pretend to enjoy it because I don't like it. I'm not actually that ticklish.
You actually don't like it at all.
I'm sort of like dead. Like my feet are dead. Like under my arms are dead. But yeah, it's not nice. I don't appreciate it.
Tommy.
I don't like it.
No, I remember like getting those raspberry. They call them raspberries.
Yes.
Yeah. I love getting those. Also on our housekeeping, we're not the intellectual dark web. It was just one episode. We wanted to talk about cancel culture. We're not canceling people. We're not like mad at it. I'm not Ben Shapiro.
What did people
say? Don't put me there. No, they said you guys are, you know, you're getting close there to that intellectual dark web having titles like cancel culture.
Oh.
So yeah, we just need to stay vigilant.
What, we like Jordan Peterson and Shapiro and the boys? Are they saying Alex Jones? Are we the Alex Jones?
They're saying, we're getting close there. We're hanging out in that corner.
Oh, I had no idea.
Those guys are at the party. We've taken a beer and are just hanging out. So
we just want to
clear that up.
We left wing. I went to Rhodes University. As long as people know that.
We wanted to clear that up, just in our housekeeping. And then also I wanted to talk about something. I started swimming recently.
Started swimming?
Swimming.
Like swimming.
Yeah, like I'm going to go now swim. And that shit will humble you. Oh my goodness.
Swimming is the worst. How did you do that? Why? Did you get back into swimming?
So basically, there's a swim in Australia. I'm not Australia, Western Australia. Similar to like Midmar Mile. Remember Midmar Mile? Remember that used to be the thing? Oh, I'm going to swim the Midmar. Yeah. But now there's one here that's called Swim to Roto. You know where Roto is?
Yes.
I mean, look, it's a fucking fast swim.
That paradise in the middle of the ocean with the little rotors running around. Yes, okay.
Yeah. So there's a Roto swim. I'm not going to swim the one this year because it would take me 3 months to prepare and I need a boat and people who would take me seriously. Mm. But in 2022, if I'm still in Perth, I want to swim the Roto swim. Remember where you heard it first, guys?
Okay, cool. So now we're starting the timer to the Roto swim. Okay.
And like, let me explain something. Like me telling you I'm going to swim the Roto swim is like me telling you I'm going to run a marathon. Like it couldn't be the furthest thing I could achieve in the next year. But I'm like, nah.
No, if Roto swim, Roto swim is definitely harder than a marathon. If you're running a marathon,
actually, yeah, it is.
If you're running a marathon, there's no sharks trying to eat you. And if you stop, you don't drown.
In the ocean.
Yes. Yeah. True. You're in the wildest place of all time. Like that's the thing about swimming. If you stop swimming, if you're tired, you drown, you die. Whereas if you're running and you stop, you just stop there. You're just on time. Yeah. You're safe.
So I just thought, man, it's a crazy challenge to have. And I'm telling you, the current update is it humbled me. I'm swimming in a 25-meter pool and I'm seeing ghosts.
Oh yeah? Is it horrible? Ghosts. How many laps do you do? If you want to, you have to expose yourself.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm currently on a beginner program and I don't know, like 30?
30 laps. 30?
Yeah.
30 laps at the tender age.
25-meter pool. No, at a 25-meter pool though.
Dude, that sounds like so much. That sounds like no, so, dude, I would die. I would die. If I had to do that, right now, dead, done, Nick done.
Yeah.
That would be over for me. That's incredible.
No, but the thing is though, like in the pool, I just see guys creaming me to bits.
Oh yeah?
Like people just aren't stopping.
Guys creaming you.
Like.
Sorry, schoolboy. Dumb schoolboy.
Stay with me here, Nick. Stay with me.
Sorry.
People are just lapping me away. So I know it's going to take some work, but it's a very humbling. I don't know if people do many things that humble them at this age. Because, you know, everything's around, like, do what you're good at. Don't challenge
yourself. Stay away from things that humble you. Yes. Yeah. No, I understand that. Yes.
So I did want to say, I'm doing that at the moment. So, guys, wish me luck. 2020.
Dude, honestly, good luck. I wish you well, so well on your endeavor. The last time I tried to swim a long distance, I literally almost died. I literally almost drowned. Really? So I've never tried to swim more than like 20 meters since then. Like never.
What
like,
do you mean
like,
you almost died? What happened?
Like deep fear of the ocean. You're going to get off topic here. But I have a cousin who's loves the water. She's loved the water and she got her PhD. She's super smart, amazingly smart. Shout out Anna in neuroscience.
Yeah.
And she said, like, instead of like a normal human being, she said, like, hey guys, I did my PhD. Let's pop a bottle of champagne. She wanted to do a long swim in the ocean. And like the whole family was involved. And I live in Cape Town, but I don't go anywhere near the water. I'm a city person. I was grown up in Johannesburg. This is in Honiston, yes.
Yes.
For our international listeners, it's a tiny little town in Cape Town, beautiful place, but where I've almost died twice. So we're doing this thing where you have to go swim around like this big rock in the ocean. And I'm saying, hey guys, I'm not doing this. And it's the whole family. But then, you know, as you're going, I've got lots of cousins and they start going, come on, you pussy, come on, let's go. You gotta swim. And then I was like, Peer pressure. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. It can't be that hard. I'm looking at my aunt, my like 60-year-old aunt. She's going to do it. I'm like, okay. Little did I forget that my aunt swims every single day of her life in the ocean. So now we get into the water and it's like quite a little bit more wavy than it looked like from the beach. I'm like, okay. But I said, I'm going to go. And I start swimming And I go in and like I'm swimming with my family and I'm like, this is okay, this is all right. And then a wave hits me, poof, in the face. And I'm quite disorientated. And now I'm like kind of 10 meters back from my family. And then another wave hits me, poof. And now I'm very disorientated. I've taken in like a lot of water and I'm looking for my family and they're like 10 meters away. And I'm like, guys, I'm going to go back in.
Oh, but so now you turned around.
I turned around, but what everyone was saying to me, but because I was so far away from them already, they'd already swum so far. They said, don't go back the way we came. Go around. There's a rip. But I couldn't hear what they were saying. So I was swimming against a riptide, which is like the only more sure way of drowning.
Is being in a riptide.
It's like tying a car to your back and, and then walking into the water. Like that is the way to drown. It's like the number one way to drown. Like
you drown in riptides.
Yes. Yeah. That's how things happen. So I'm swimming against the rip and I'm like, I'm not going very far. And I'm starting to get very tired. And I'm looking at my family who's very far away now. They don't know that I'm drowning. And then I look at my other family who are on a rock who can see me drowning, but they'll never get here in time. I'll be shark food by the time they get to save me. So now I'm like swimming and I'm swimming like this, like for the visual, for those you can see, I'm like on my back trying to just conserve as much energy.
Oh, you're just trying to conserve energy at this point. Or like, you just on your back.
Just like this, like trying to flap away. I'm moving nowhere for like 7 minutes. I'm going nowhere, just taking in water. Like it's a thing. And then I'm not a religious person, but then God rescued me because I don't believe in God, but Yahweh was there and he pushed me with a wave and then I felt my toe hit a rock and I had to use all the energy in my whole body, right? To, with my big toe, latch onto this rock just with my toe and pull it.
Yeah, give me a word.
I had tensed.
I was joking here, but your life was on the line.
It was on the line. I tensed my entire body and focused all power and energy into my big toe and like flexed everything to get my, pull myself onto my big toe. And then, and eventually I got myself onto this rock. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Kill Bill.
And then I moved onto it and then I eventually found like a little bit and then I sort of walked my way onto the beach. It was terrifying, but also very humbling. It reminded me quite quickly as to I don't swim so long distances. Yeah, it was quite embarrassing, but also really cute because my little brother was on the side of the water, and his older brother walking off the beach. I'm ashamed of myself. Like my little brother almost watched me like drown in the water, and then I said like it wasn't my best day, bro. And then he said like, you know what, Nicholas, I'm proud of you because you knew you couldn't do it and you came back. That shows real guts. And I was like, who is this philosopher? So yeah, it was quite cute. It was actually.
Says one. Hey, when I first came to Oz, I remember I told my dad I wanted to surf.
Oh
like,
yeah?
I'll go to Australia, I'll surf. He's like, if you surf and you get eaten by a shark, your Australian friends must bury you. I'm not going to bury someone who is in the water getting eaten by sharks. So,
like it's. What are you doing in the water? What are you doing?
What were you doing there?
When's any apple?
Didn't you just study? And you're there getting eaten by sharks. Your Australian friends must bury you then. So
that is the most. That is the most your dad thing I've heard in my whole life.
So I need to make sure that like if I do end up swimming in the ocean that
don't get eaten by a shark.
All the shark monitors at all points, yeah.
Yes, yeah. That sounds good.
Imagine me just fighting a shark like, don't, dude, my dad won't even bury me. Don't eat me. Stop.
He won't even fly my buddy back to South Africa. Come, go get someone else.
Yeah.
Oh, hectic.
So definitely a challenge if I end up swimming. Cause I'll be against the lot. The pedestal.
Out of 100.
Oh, sorry. Just got a political update. Looks like Biden might be taking it.
No, really. What did you see?
Well, we'll save it. We'll come back.
Okay, we'll save it. Okay, cool. Because I haven't seen that.
For me, it's like a battle of manhood. The play the scenario in my head that, let's say I'm in my home with my family and a random guy just comes to my house, opens the doors and starts living his life in my house. That won't happen. I'd rather die than live it up.
I'm so hyped by Chasing the Sun. I'm so hyped. I've never loved something more. Honestly, I've never, besides like my family, this is the thing I've loved the most. Honestly.
So give the listener some context. What is Chasing the Sun? Why do you love it so much?
So Chasing the Sun, for those people outside of South Africa and those people who don't quite understand South African rugby, Chasing the Sun is a 5-part documentary that covers the South African World Cup victory in 2019. So they start from 2016, when Alistair Coetzee took over, and then his firing, and then Rassie Rasmus taking over with 2 years left, appointing the first black captains the Springboks have ever had, and their eventual victory. But they've had unprecedented access to the Springbok camp during.
Yeah.
So it's not like your usual sports documentary where it's like, so what do you guys think of this? Like, oh yes, yeah, we trained really hard and we prayed to God and we won the game. It's like,
it's no filter.
It's no filter, bro.
It's no holds bar, yeah. And I think even if you're not a rugby fan, like, this is potentially one of the best sports documentaries I've ever seen.
Can you say that as someone who's also loves other sports? Like,
yeah, I can honestly say, even if you have no idea how rugby works, you'll enjoy this documentary.
Because I would love that opinion of someone who doesn't watch rugby to see what they think. Because there's so many great human stories as well in the show.
Yeah, it's immaculately well done. I mean, just the interpersonal stories, the sort of non-filter access. And like, I think this is the kind of documentary like even like corporate guys will use in sort of leadership camps and leadership campaigns. I can see schools using this. Like, I think it's a full-on masterclass on leadership.
That is so interesting. Can you give me like 3 bullet points as to why you think it's so valuable in that way?
I think it's valuable because, first of all, it gives you the hero's journey in terms of, like, you know, when the doco starts, you know, between episode one, like, the Springboks are sort of in disarray. You know, you've had selection issues. The coaching staff didn't really get to do what they wanted to do with the team. And you've got this team who's like, essentially, you know, people forget. So I've got dropped to like 8th in the world at that point. Like, things were bad. And just how it builds. Okay, what happens when you're in a slump as a team? Like, what are the processes you have to take to get yourself out? I think it depicts that really well. And I think it instills that, like, you know, sometimes people talk about corporate values or just having belief in yourself or trying to achieve something, but like, they really hone in on that leadership quality in that we're going to build a system and we need to get everyone to buy in, but we really need to get everyone to buy in.
I think that's huge. I think you hit the nail on the head there.
I think the way they portrayed that was just like, I don't know if it's ever been portrayed better.
And to add on to that, they took the same personnel from the previous regime. So it's not like they took Alistair Coetzee and they just wiped everything that he had. And they didn't fire Math Proudfoot. They kept him as the forwards coach. They didn't fire him Zondile Stick. No, in fact, Alistair Coetzee fired him Zondile Stick. Russell brought him back. Because he obviously saw the value that these guys could bring to the coaching staff.
Yeah.
It goes,
it was that fundamental thing where, like, it not only was it a change in, like, the leadership personnel, but it was a change in mind frame around leadership. Like, I think that's like some of the best leadership I've ever seen, hands down.
Really? I mean, it's exceptional the way you see he manages the guys as well. Like, he's stern, but then you also crack a little joke. But then also my sort of favorite thing when it comes to communication is that he'll be mapping it out. And he goes, guys, how do you beat Japan? Guys, how do you beat Japan? Billy, what do you think is their biggest weakness? And he's not actually talking to Billy. He's talking to the whole group. But he'll mention 3 or 4 players' name in every sentence. So they're all focused and they're all looking. And I think even that kind of communication is so important for a management kind of role. I thought it was fascinating.
And I think even like episode one where, you know, Rassie Erasmus, who's a Springbok coach like throughout the World Cup campaign, this guy, he had a great job. He was in Ireland. He just moved his family over there. He was about to get European citizenship. Like, everything personally for him was going great. But just, like, having that higher calling, I don't even call it like a higher calling, but, like, having that responsibility to your country and willing to take that kind of risk, it's just, it's leadership. Like, that, even that, bang, that was just leadership to me.
Can you see, like, the
everyone on everyone around you, everyone around you just being like, dude, don't do this. This is like...
Like, why would you do that? They got beaten 57-0. Why?
Yeah, why would you do that?
Do you know what I really like about Erasmus? And it's this... You meet a few of these people in South Africa. Not a lot of them, but a few. And I would like to regard myself as one of these people. You get these, like, kind of... These, like, patriots who just love the country. But it's not like this kind of... Like this, I'm Afrikaans... And I love what I love, you know, what Afrikaans people are in the country, or I'm Zulu and I love what Zulu people love about the country. You know what I mean? It's this understanding. I love this country for every single race and person and culture that's in it. And I think together we can make something beautiful. He's one of those guys. You know what I mean? He didn't see, I think he wanted to win, don't get me wrong, but he wanted to win but he knew transformation was important. It was important, but also not important. Does that make sense? Like
I think the one thing that he did really well and what he got right, that a lot of coaches previously didn't get right, is that he understood that he needed to put more black players in a position to succeed. And I think previously a lot of coaches didn't actually do that. They would just sort of like put the black players there for transformation. But it wasn't kind of like, how do we tailor this game for these players to be successful?
100%.
And I think that's what he did really well.
100%. Like, we speak about, like Heineke Meyer, for example. I want to work in the sports industry one day, so I don't want to make any enemies. But I think Heineke Meyer was basically like quite discriminatory in a lot of the ways that he picked players. I think there's a famous Peter de Villiers quote where he goes, where they pick Jesse Creel on the wing against Argentina, and eventually the Argentinians score on his wing because he doesn't really know how to defend at wing. And Peter de Villiers says afterwards, you called him the best outside center in the world. In the world. Then you play him on the wing. Instead of like a Loisio Mvovo at the time, or like a JB Peterson. You know what I mean? Like an experienced winger. And whereas he picked player for player, and those players played brilliantly in those positions. It was incredible to watch. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and even when he talks about like how maybe individually there might be better rugby players, like if you just put the stats down on the sheet, but he said, I wanted warriors on my team because I know no matter what, these guys will fight for everything they've got. Oh, man. I'm willing to say that documentary is a masterclass on leadership.
It's amazing.
If you don't read a book, you need to watch that. You need to watch that
document. It's incredible. Just to go back quickly, because I've got goosebumps and I'm G'd. When Trevor Nyakani, I think it's episode 2, so I don't want to give too much away, but Trevor Nyakani is talking about Bongi Mwanambi, and he goes, Bongi is dog. He's dog. He's top dog. I'm like, this is like I watch Chasing the Sun episode every time I work out now. Because nothing gets me as G.
Oh, it gets you hype, yeah.
Yeah, it just hypes me up so much. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm absolutely loving it. I'm episode 3 now. So that was the Bongi episode, just to correct you there. That was episode 3.
But episode 3, yes. Okay.
Yeah, it's episode 3. But yeah, I'm loving it. And I definitely see myself watching multiple times through.
Yes, yeah.
And I want to know every single leadership book Rassi Erasmus is writing.
Yes, reading. 100%. Dude, imagine.
Just the fact.
Imagine the IP.
Just a bit like where he literally was like, okay, cool. Winning, transformation, depth. And just the fact that he was just putting all these other players on the field and commentators, people who call themselves rugby professionals or savants of the game were like, what is he doing? Like, this doesn't make sense. And he's like, no, we knew what we're doing. We're building depth. We're building for a World Cup campaign. We're not trying to just win games against you guys.
Like when he said,
like, that's leadership. That's like having a focused belief and being resolved in your pursuit, no matter what, to achieve a common goal. Like that.
and
that
motivates
the fuck out of me.
And the buy-in from your shareholders. And I mean that from like players, coaching staff, whatever. Like when they say like, listen, we might have 50% win rate this year. That's what we might have. But the goal is to win the World Cup. And who, I mean,
or even like, we're gonna beat New Zealand in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like that's all we care about for the year.
Because that's all they wanted to do.
I needed that to instill belief in these guys, to show them that we can work. Oh, dude. it's just It's just too smart. Like, it's just proper leadership.
You know what? My favorite part of that whole thing, and my heart is with this guy, honestly, because I don't know if he's innocent or guilty or whatever, but Piyo Dianti, I think, scores twice in that game in New Zealand.
Yeah, in New Zealand. Yeah, that's episode 1-2, yeah.
And then you see, and in the final...
They didn't acknowledge him at all. Yeah, that hurt. Dude, that did hurt a little bit.
In that final second, he saves us from the try. Damien McKenzie has got it out 10 meters from the line. Damien McKenzie, one of the most elusive players ever. And Apiro just shoots up and hits the ball out of his hand. Well, hits his arm, so he fumbles the ball. And you go, that guy saved us. And I really do feel for him. Just a quick shout out to Apiro. But...
I'm looking for him to have a massive... rugby campaign coming into next year.
Yes. I mean, if he's innocent, we don't know. So I'm assuming if he's guilty,
he's innocent until proven guilty.
Yes. Yeah. If he's proven innocent.
I'm rooting for everybody black anyway.
Thing is,
so I'm hoping all the best for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, like we said, I know a lot of you aren't rugby fans or people of the game, but I implore you to watch this documentary.
So you mentioned earlier there was an update.
Yeah, it looks like, so by the time you hear this, the next president may have been announced.
Yes.
But as it stands, it looks like Biden might be taking it. We don't know. No one actually knows.
It's
looking good for Biden.
On what standpoint do you say that? What information did you receive?
Well, it looks like Biden might be taking Michigan.
Oh, and how many electoral votes does that have? Sorry, I'm just having a private conversation on the podcast.
He's at like 38, 238 now.
Wasn't 238? Ooh.
Yeah. Well, I need to play. I don't know if you were on Wall Street Journal. You can play the game where you like give them the electoral votes and then like kind of shows you the road to win the election.
Oh, yeah. Is that fun?
Play that? No.
No, I didn't see that. I'd love to.
Dude, definitely check it out. It's good fun. But yeah, what did you enjoy about this election?
What have I enjoyed about this election?
What intrigued you?
What intrigued me? I think first of all, my favorite thing ever was when Trump. So you know when Biden did a little speech and he said, "We're on track to win this election," so which is like quite a confident statement. But then obviously Trump had to outdo that. So he came out and said, "We have won this election."
Frankly, we won tonight.
Yeah, we won. We won. Done. Stop counting the votes. We've won this election. So then he starts doing a speech about that, like, we've won because of this, whatever. And I was watching an NBC broadcast. And NBC cut the broadcast in half. And they're like, sorry, we had to cut that off. There was too much misinformation being said there.
Sorry, that was just too many lies. We had to cut that out.
It was too many lies. The president of the country is saying so many lies that a newsreel has to stop reporting it. I mean, that's like one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my entire life. But then there was something that you really appreciated about that speech as well, wasn't there?
Well, just the fact that he like basically was just calling for absolute fraud.
Yes.
It's like, bro, you're like this was the same election you won last time. How did fraud just rock up now?
Yes, exactly. Same systems as when you won. So yeah. But also, I mean, what I found was hilarious is like that room was just white. It's just white. White on white on white on white on white.
Oh, you're talking about when was Trump like was doing his speech?
Yes, yeah. It was like a Kanye West concert. It was white.
Yeah. No, but you guys, we need your help. In that room, there was a man with cornrows. He was wearing sunglasses and a white hoodie. We need to find out who this man was because everyone else in that room was wearing suits.
He was there and looked comfortable. It wasn't like, maybe maybe I've underdressed. Like, no, he was like, oh, I feel at home here. This is good.
Yeah, he was chatting to people afterwards as the cameras were fading out. Like, we need to find out who this guy's in Trump's camp.
Yes.
He's got cornrows. Listen to me. Cornrows, sunglasses. Guys, it's 2 a.m. at night. A white hoodie. He's sitting there like there's only 200 people allowed in that room. We need to find this man. Guys, he was, please help us find this
I'm
man.
So sure it was Amigo. It looked like Amigo. It had, he had the aura of Amigo. It's one of them. So,
what, you mean like the Amigos, like the rap group?
Yes, yeah. It was like one of rapper. Them. I'm so sure. I'm so sure it was one of them. I don't know. It was a...
Guys, we need to find this man, whoever he is. If he's a political strategist, if he's a rapper.
Yeah.
We need to find out who can get in those kind of rooms dressed like that so that we can also achieve such
a success.
Because he won the election for me.
Yeah. Make that guy president. I want that guy to be president.
I want that guy to be president. He's in the White House wearing a hoodie, cornrows, and sunglasses. So we need to find that guy, if this possible, guys.
Amazing. Unbelievable. But something that I picked up in this election... And maybe I'll be made to eat my words in a few days. And that's, I'm happy to do that if I'm proven wrong. But from now on, before what you told me now, it looked like Trump was going to win, right? And it looks like he was quite confidently building votes and looked like he was going to take the election.
Yes.
And if we look at the campaigning of why he could have won, or why he would have won, it was like, and I had this conversation with Evander earlier, it's people voted for the guy who's going to put food on their plate. So if Trump brings jobs to America, he created, whether it was Obama who created that economy and he's just run it as well as he did or whatever, he's put food on that plate, right? He's put foods on people's plate. So the economy is obviously more on people's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The economy is more important than social issues. And Biden ran on BLM, LGBTQ rights, you know what I mean? The morality, feminism, like all this kind of stuff. And it shows that no one actually gives a fuck. People want a good economy.
I want money and I want food.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Can you do that for me, please?
Yes. And I think maybe in future, when you run, you don't talk about anything else besides, where's the money? Who's going to put money in my pocket and food on my plate?
You said something when we went recording. You said there were two outcomes. Do you remember what you said?
Yes, I did say. I said, I made a poll on my Instagram. Is either going to be civil war or peaceful fascism? So basically saying that there's either Biden's going to win and all the Trump supporters are going to unleash hell on America and it's going to be a civil war, or Trump's going to win and it's going to be, and the Dems are too pussy to, well, I wouldn't say use the word pussy like it's a bad thing. They don't have the balls to, oh, that's also a guy's life here.
It's a double take. That just happened.
A lot of microaggressions here. My apologies, everyone.
You try to save yourself. You literally tried to save yourself.
I just screwed up. Anyway, guys, I'm so sorry. Dems are too scared to fight the...
We grew up in a male toxic environment. It's not your fault.
I'm only male boarding school. I'm so sorry. I'm part of the problem. I know.
Fight for your survival and your masculinity every day. It's not your fault, Nick.
I'm so sorry. I feel like this pod is like an ab. Yes, dude, I'm sore from laughing. What was I saying now? Yes, so, and the Dems.
The guts?
The Dems are the guts.
Yes, the guts.
I'm sure that's offensive to people without stomachs. People have had gastric bypasses.
Eat with bags and shit. Yeah.
They don't have the guts to fight the Republicans. So it'll just be peaceful fascism because Trump will bring fascism to the state in his last 4 years. Because last 4 years, what's he going to do? He can do whatever he wants. Now he's not trying to get reelected. He knows he can't get reelected. So you can go crazy for 4 years.
Go wild, give mega deals to Russia. Like, nah, come through. It's fine. It'll be sweet. Don't worry. Come through. Got you.
Use the entire American GDP to build like a million golf courses wherever you want it to be. Just cover everything in gold. Make everything gaudy. It'll be ridiculous.
I really want him to lose just so that Biden can be like, yeah, we won. I'm the president. And Trump's like, no. It's like, no, but we have a democratic process. Like, you lost. He's, nah, no.
No.
Because remember, they said two things on in each of their speeches, right? Biden came out. He's like, we're going to wait till every single vote is counted. Right? And Trump is like, no, dude, no, stop. Stop counting now.
Stop counting right now, please.
No, because we don't know you, Oaks. You guys have cousins and friends. Now all of a sudden there's going to be an extra 50 votes coming out. It's like, dude, people are living through fucking COVID. You think Oaks have time to like falsify their votes?
I mean, I just want to vote and go home. It's like how are they going to just fake an election? They're going to fake like all these ballots. It's like, no, we must stop now. Thank you.
Stop it right now. No, but there's stuff coming in. Remember COVID happened? Nah. Get the Supreme Court. Stop. No, stop. And I think Trump's guys might just pull up.
What are they going to do?
Stand up. No, pins down.
End of the exam. Sorry, bye-bye.
Yeah. No, pens down, please. We're not counting that. No, he wrote off the time.
No.
This guy thinks it's an exam. Mate, this is a fucking... This is the elections for the United States of America.
Stop now. Thank you very much. Pens down. That's the results. Trump wins. Thank you. Another 3 years. That's...
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to watch over the coming days. How long they end up counting for. If they're even allowed to count.
If they're allowed to count.
Trump's like, no, you have to get sworn in as president. I still have the military. If you guys...
And what if he says
no, recount it again, and I want my guys to review everything you counted?
Yeah, possible, could be like a real like a real thing, like 100%. Like, you know, when Trevor Noah said when he first started, when Trump first started as a president, Trevor Noah said Trump is an African president, and Loki could be, dude. He could get in there and be like, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. I'm not fucking leaving.
That's actually going to be the telltale. I'm interested to see how he manages that.
Yeah, I think it might. That's what might happen.
But hey, look, I read something just then saying Biden's campaign manager just said, "Hey, one track to win."
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw, you know, throughout the day, how the betting odds just kept swinging.
Yes.
1 minute you could make money here. Trump was at one point paying $1.20. $1.20, guys, is for every dollar you put in, you get $20 back. That's usually when like a really good team is playing a really bad team. Like it's a guarantee. You actually don't even bet on it because there's no return on your investment, really.
Mm.
And now he's paying $4.43.
No.
So. It looks like it's done dizzy.
Is that how it switched?
Dude.
That's nuts.
These bookies are crazy. And I just follow the money, to be honest, with these type of things.
Oh, I should have made a bet on Biden this morning.
Oh, yeah, you could have made money. But now it's only paying $1.20. No, but now some people be like, hey, Trump, $4.43. Why not?
Mm. Anyways, put it on.
It has been exceptionally exciting to watch the... American election.
It's been amazing. It's kind of like been the Olympics. It's like that thing that just goes on 24 hours. Like, you can always just watch it. Like, it's so great. So it's been like quite nice to, I woke up at like 5 a.m. this morning and then I phoned you and we
watched, happening.
Yeah. Watch for 2 hours and then go have like a bit of a nap, wake up, start working and stuff, have it in the background. It's really quite nice, actually. I'm really enjoying it. Which is like an election every day.
And there's always someone ready to have a conversation with you about it.
Oh, yeah, dude. If there's someone that you want to have a conversation with, whether it's like a mentor or maybe someone you're interested in romantically that you want to cook up a conversation, you phone them up, go right now and say, who's going to win, Biden or Trump? And I promise you'll speak for 45 minutes.
It's a quick masterclass for any of you guys.
Yes, yeah. 100%. It should be super exciting. It should be pretty good, I think. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I think with that, we should wrap things up for this week.
100%.
Hold on. Did we mention why we weren't here last week? Did you apologize?
Oh, no, I didn't. We are very, very sorry.
And then explain how you're going to do a challenge for missing the pod. Like, what are you going to do?
What am I going to do?
Push-ups, burpees, put out some content.
I'd do 100 push-ups, but I'd do that literally every day. That would be
okay. Oh, sorry.
That would be like...
Sorry, King. All right, okay. We feel you, King. All right.
I think you're forgetting I'm ripped.
Okay, fair enough. I'm ripped. Wait, but can you apologize, though, Mr. Rick?
Can I put that in the pod? I don't know. It sounds like such a dish.
Oh, no, we're definitely leaving that in. We need to hear you in your entirety.
I apologize. I'm so sorry for last week, guys. What happened was, it was like a cluster kerfuffle of issues because there was, for some reason, my microphone system didn't work. So we tried to record without the microphone and it sounded like I was recording inside of a cave. Like it was just so echoey. And then my internet was just bad that week for some reason. So Kanye had this fantastic description of necklacing, which we do need to get at some stage because it was amazing. He interviewed his mom to get that great description. And he was talking. And while he was talking, I just saw like a blur and someone go like, it was just the worst thing. So the recording didn't come out. So my sincerest apologies for no pod last week. And to make it up to you guys, I'm not sure exactly. I'll have to work it out.
Maybe ask the guys.
Yes. If you guys have a suggestion as to how I should apologize to all of you, please give me a shout. Hit us up on our Instagram DMs and I'll be sure to do that.
You can do it.
Yeah, give me a truth or dare or something. I don't care.
Also, guys, before we wrap this up, we are wrapping this up. We want to congratulate ourselves and you guys on we hit 1,000. We hit our first K.
Dude, amazing. So, unbelievable. Congratulations, guys. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. We love you all.
Thank you so much. And we're racing to 2K as well.
Yes, yeah.
So that's pretty exciting to see that the podcast is growing.
We'll be there soon.
Pretty exponentially, which is a good look.
Yes, yeah, that's a good look. And one more thing, it is Movember. As you can see, me and Kanye are both supporting the cause. Kanye's tash is a lot better than mine, but I'm working towards one. And yeah, just remember to look after your mental health, check your testes, and yeah, man, cancer is a real thing, guys. So look after yourselves. And yeah.
We'll wrap it up with that, guys. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you so much for listening.